I was always inspired by Billy Bob Thornton and how he made Sling Blade. And he financed the whole movie just based off a short. I always felt like, you know what, if I'm going to try to sell something, I want to show a short. That'd be my advice to you if you want to pitch something. Make it yourself, and then show it. Because it's a visual creation. Show them what the creation is. And more than anything, you need to prove to them that you're the only person who can make the show. Make people trust and believe in it so much that you're the best and only person who can do it. A great example I have of doing it yourself is when I did a show called Derek and Simon. Bob Odenkirk directed it, and we created it together with Simon Helberg. We shot a presentation of it on our own and sold it to HBO based off of the presentation. It didn't get picked up, but it went to Sundance, and later we did it for the website Super Deluxe, one of the best experiences of my life. Bob Odenkirk is and will always be my hero and mentor.
Derek, I love that story so much. I can't even tell you. Okay, I just have one more question. What advice would you give to a person who just got here?
One thing that I wish someone told me when I moved here was, there's no secret to this business. This is a business that nobody understands. Once you accept that, you can do anything. Just be you and you'll be fine. So off of that, I think the best advice would be slow down. Everything is going to be fine. Breathe. Seriously, we don't know if we're going to be here tomorrow, so just focus on what you can do today. Get involved with classes. Stay close to people who just arrived as well. You might feel this desire to be friends with people at a higher level, but I think the only way to learn is from the bottom. The more people that you're with at the bottom, the more you'll grow. I can humbly say that one of the best things for me out here has been the people that I've met. Stay close to the ones that you can tell are here to protect you, because most aren't. And that's not a negative thing to say. It's just true. Also, you don't have to be an actor. There are other things in the entertainment business or in the world to do if this isn't working out. It's not for everybody. And that doesn't mean you're not good. It just means there's something else for you. Maybe this sounds anti-actor, but it's not, because it's something I didn't really think about until I forced myself to start writing and making my own stuff. I felt like all I wanted to do is to be an actor and to perform. But I started to realize, instead of waiting for parts, I could create them. Make your own stuff. There's no excuse to not be making your own stuff if you feel like you're not being seen as an actor. Prove you can do it. There's never been a better time to make your own stuff than right now, 2017. Even in 2030, it's going to be great. Finally, don't compare yourself to anybody. It's the hardest thing to do, to not compare. But really, it's the worst thing you can do, is comparing yourself to anyone. I loved Chris Farley and will always love Chris Farley, but I wanted to be Chris Farley. And it took me years to realize, I'm not Chris Farley. I'll just be me. I think to be a working actor is to understand it's not going to be fun all the time, because nothing's always fun. But if it's a thing that you go to sleep thinking about and wake up thinking about, then that's your heart, and no one can touch your heart. Be you, and no one can ever touch you. If you're yourself, no one can stop you.
Reed Birney. I met actor Reed Birney in New York City in 2013. My husband needed a 50-year-old actor to play the lead role in a play reading for some off-Broadway theaters. Lee's agent recommended Reed. "He's a veteran of the stage, a great actor," he said. "Everyone in the New York theater scene knows Reed." Reed did us a huge favor by saying yes. He blew us away in the reading, and we all became friends. Over the years, I've learned his story. In 1978, at the age of 22, Reed was starring on Broadway in the hit play Gemini. After that, he says, nothing happened for 30 years. But then, in 2008, he was cast in the disturbingly dark off-Broadway show Blasted. And that, he says, is what changed everything. Reed struggled for 40 years before hitting his stride. In 2016, he won a Tony Award for his role in the Broadway play The Humans. If you are looking for a tale of determination and persistence, this is it. Thank you, Reed, for being here. All right, let's begin. Tell me a little about your training. I know you attended Boston University, but is it true that you left before graduating?
I dropped out after sophomore year. I was very, very ambitious and impatient. I loved my freshman year, but I hated sophomore year almost from the first day. I also felt, in my youthful arrogance, that they weren't taking me very seriously at this school. They treated me like I was a kid. But now I look back on it. I weighed about 35 pounds, and I looked about 9 years old, so why would they take me seriously? I wouldn't take me seriously either. So I dropped out and moved to New York.
Why New York and not Los Angeles?
Halfway through sophomore year, a classmate came up to me and said that they were doing a musical version of Look, Homeward, Angel on Broadway, and he said I should play Eugene. Well, I thought, well, I will. Frances Sternhagen was a family friend, and I wrote to her and asked if she could get me an audition, and she did. I snuck out of school one Wednesday, took the train down from Boston, auditioned at the producer's apartment on 7th Avenue and 53rd Street. I went in, and I sang, and maybe I read a scene. It went fine. I thought I'd gotten it, but looking back on it, I don't think they were interested in me. I moved to New York anyway to study at Circle in the Square, which is where they were going to do Look, Homeward, Angel. I became a student there so I could be in the play. So began this obsession with Thomas Wolfe and Look, Homeward, Angel. I started writing letters to the composer saying, you know, I am Eugene. Just madness.
Okay, wait. Let me make sure I understand. You auditioned at the producer's house, didn't hear anything, but dropped out of school anyway and moved to New York so you could attend Circle in the Square and started reading up on everything to do with the show, just in case?
Just in case.
How did that work out?
I started at Circle in the Square in the fall of 74, and I think maybe the second day I was there, they announced that they were going to do the musical Where's Charlie instead. The production of Look, Homeward, Angel was postponed for a year, so in my mind, that just gave me more time to prepare.
They tell you they aren't doing the play, but you're thinking the part of Eugene could possibly still be yours.
Right. It's up for grabs. It could still be mine. And I'm working really hard on it, but I drop out of Circle in the Square in December of 74 because I got my equity card doing this children's theater tour, which I got through backstage. I'd sent my picture in and went in, and I sang a couple of songs. Just terrible, terrible children's theater. Swiss Family Robinson set in America. Nothing Swiss. Connecticut Yankee and King Arthur's Court. I was Sir Lancelot. We toured in a sad station wagon from Maine to New Orleans to Florida. Seven of us piled in there with no iPads or Walkman or anything. We had to listen to the AM radio. It's awful. The oldest guy in the company was 40. He was a Vietnam vet with serious PTSD. It was a very unhappy group.
Was there anything about it that was fun?
No, I think there were some laughs along the way, but all of us would attest to it being the worst 9 months of our lives.
But you completed your contract. Did you ever consider quitting?
Yes, all the time, but I stayed.
So what did you do next?
When I got back from the children's theater tour, I wrote one last letter to the composer. This was about, 9 months, a year later. And I said, look, I hear you're doing the show out on Long Island. I'm not crazy anymore. If you still haven't cast Eugene, call me.
I love how you will not give up on this. It's crazy, but I love it. What did he say?
He called me back, and I got asked to do the backers auditions, which was basically singing the score for money people. We must have done 10 or 15 shows for potential backers that summer. What I didn't know was that everyone doing the backers audition was going to be in the show except me. They had had somebody else in mind for the role of Eugene who didn't want to do the backers audition, so I was just a fill-in. In the meantime, I got into a great acting class with Sigourney Weaver and Mercedes Rule. And I was in this class for about 7 years with these gals, and it was fantastic. It really saw me through some rough emotional times. We did a showcase in 76, and Sigourney was in it, and two of her friends from Yale came to see it. Sigourney was about to start a play right after this at Playwrights Horizons, maybe the second play ever at Playwrights, and they asked me to play her little brother. I was happy to do it. I didn't have anything else. It was called Gemini. It was supposed to just be six performances at Playwrights Horizons. And at the very last performance, a producer from Long Island came. He'd just lost a play at his theater, and he needed something to go in right away. So he picked us up to move out to Long Island. Sigourney left that because she had another job, and this was all pre-Alien. We did Gemini for a month out in Huntington, Long Island. And at the last show in Huntington, Lanford Wilson and Marshall Mason came because they'd lost a play at Circle Rep. So they moved us back into New York, where we were a huge hit and you couldn't get a ticket. And from there, we moved to Broadway and I was with the show for 2 years.
That's amazing. What you thought was just a little 6-performance thing turned into a Broadway run. Good thing you weren't in Look Homeward, Angel.
Yeah. While we were rehearsing Gemini at Playwrights Horizons for our 6-show run, they were rehearsing Look Homeward, Angel for a dinner theater out on Long Island. And they hadn't cast me, and I was devastated. I thought, I'm stuck doing this stupid play, Gemini. They're all living the dream, doing the play I wanted to do. I remember coming into rehearsal one day, wailing, crying. I'm in this stupid showcase, and they're rehearsing, blah. Then Gemini opens on Broadway. It's a huge success. I go out to see Look Homeward, Angel, and it's terrible. It takes them an additional year to open on Broadway. I go to the opening night party of Look Homeward, Angel, which was literally a year to the day that Gemini had opened. And I was there when the bad reviews came in. You know, they come in with the newspapers and they read the bad reviews. The party's over. It clears out. And I'm left hugging all my friends as they're sobbing. They thought it was going to be a big hit. Anyway, big lesson there about how you never, ever know. You just never, ever know. I certainly didn't.
Being on Broadway in Gemini, a hit show, was essentially your first professional theater experience. That's a pretty huge success right out of the gate.
In many ways, it was a terrible thing to happen for me for several reasons. One, it was such a big hit. I had the least flashy role in the play. It was a real collection of oddballs, and I was like the normal guy, kind of like Barry Bostwick in Rocky Horror. So all the flashy characters won awards and were plucked out to do other shows, and I couldn't get another job. So I got wildly depressed. I was 22 and on Broadway in a big hit show, and I was miserable. Now, look, I think the 20s are very hard anyway. They were certainly my hardest decade. There was probably stuff I needed to deal with anyway, but for someone as ambitious and driven as I was, to have to deal with that stuff was very good and miserable. And I think that was the first time I thought about leaving acting.
But you didn't. Why not?
I'd already dropped out of school and I didn't have a degree, and I would have had to start as a freshman, that is if I knew what I wanted to do. I thought maybe I could be an architect at one point, but that's a lot of math and that's not for me. Every time I would call home, my mother would say, "Don't you want to go back to college and study French? How is that better than being an actor? I'm really going to clean up if I'm a French teacher."
That's funny. I minored in journalism. It was my parents' idea. They thought I could be a news anchor. To them, it was the perfect blend of a real job and being on TV. As if being on TV in any form was the goal.
Our parents think that our impulse to be an actor is to get attention, and getting attention as a newscaster is the same as doing a play. I remember being with my folks once during college, and we were at the beach, and we ran into some old friends of theirs, and then they invited us in for a drink. They asked me what I did for a living, and when I told them I was an actor, I saw this whole world of emotions cross this woman's face. She pulled my mother aside as we were leaving, and she said, "How do you feel about that?" I also had an agent say to me once, and I think the world thinks this too, "In this business, you're either a star or you're a bum." That was my agent. Well, I'm not quite a star, so I guess I'm a bum. So how does it feel representing a bum? And I think the world thinks that.
So what happened after Gemini?
Gemini ended, and then I was just another schmuck actor kicking around. Gene Lasko, who was our acting teacher, was an actor studio guy, and he was Arthur Penn's producer and right-hand man. And Arthur was doing a movie written by Steve Tesich, who had just won the Oscar for Breaking Away. It was called Four Friends, and it followed three guys and a girl through the 60s as they grew apart and came together. Gene brought me in to audition, and I got it. It was a fantastic part. If the movie was a three-act play, my story was the second act. I was the lead guy's college roommate, and I had multiple sclerosis. It was a real Tiny Tim kind of role. But it was beautifully written, and I got to do great stuff. But I got that on my own. My agents had no real sense of what it was. They negotiated the deal, but they hadn't submitted me for it.
Was this your first film? And was that part of your plan, to do both theater and film?
Oh, yeah. I was going to be a big movie star.
It seems like you're headed in that direction, right? I mean, this is a hugely anticipated movie from an Academy Award-winning writer. It doesn't get much better than that. Are you hitting the big time now?
So I do the film, and I have an amazing time. It's going to come out in December of 81. In September of 81, I took a chance and went to Sam Cohn, who was the king of all agents at that point. He was Meryl Streep's agent and Sigourney's agent. He was Mike Nichols' agent and Woody Allen's agent. He was everybody's agent. He was Arthur Penn and Steve Tessitt's agent. So he was very involved with Four Friends. He'd seen Rough Cuts and things. And I said, I would like to work with you. And he said that I had to get out of my contract with my other agent first. I immediately called up my other agents, and I told them I was leaving and then signed with Sam. Now, Four Friends opens in December, and every agent in America called me up after it opened, and they said they wanted to work with me. People were saying I was going to get nominated for an Oscar, blah, blah, blah. I said to all these people that I just signed with Sam Cohn, and they said, good luck, knowing that they couldn't compete with that. And then the movie tanked. It makes some people's 10 best list and some people's 10 worst list. Really crazy. Nobody was lukewarm on it, but they either loved it or they hated it. Mostly people hated it. Had the movie been a hit, Sam Cohn would have been the perfect place to be because he would have helped me field offers. But because the movie tanked, I spent a year without a single audition, not one. I didn't work for a year. And I would keep calling Sam to ask if I should be worried. And he'd say, no, not yet, not yet. But after a year of nothing, I felt like the ship had sailed. So I started calling a lot of these other agents back, and they were like, no, the moment's gone. I'd been in a big Broadway play, and I had a lead in a major motion picture, and none of it mattered. It was really hard because I really felt like I'd screwed up. I gambled with the Sam Cohn thing, and I'd lost.
That sounds awful. Just crushing. What did you do?
I was doing parts out of town, and I got really depressed. I got really, really sad. I'm like, well, I'm off to St. Louis to do Merry Wives of Windsor. Okay. And then you're gone for 3 months in the wintertime, and nobody cares that you were doing that thing. You might as well have taken a trip for all the good it did your career. So in May of 85, I'm 31 years old, and I'm walking up Broadway after a particularly gruesome audition, and a little voice said to me, go around the world, take a trip. My grandmother had died in 84 and left me a chunk of money, so I took that money, and I moved to Paris, where I lived for 5 months, and then I took off with a backpack and traveled around the world by myself. I really had to do it to survive. I think of it now as a sabbatical, but it really saved my life. The point of the trip was to see all the things I'd wanted to see but never let myself see because I was in this dysfunctional relationship with show business.
Did it seem like just a break, or was there a chance you might not return to acting?
The point of the trip was to see things. The second point of the trip was to figure out what I was going to do. If I could figure out how not to be an actor, that would be great. And I kept a pretty rigorous journal. That was my travel companion. And there were rough days when it was very lonely, and I remember just before I left, I was at a dinner party with friends, and everybody knew I was going on my trip, and they were talking about auditions or some terrible show business thing, and I was like, so long, suckers. And one of the guys turned to me and said, Reed, you can run, but you can't hide. And I remember waking up in paradise one day, I think it was Bali, and being really depressed, and I thought, oh, this has nothing to do with show business. This has nothing to do with my agents or a role or anything. This is me. This is my inability to find joy where I am. But also, in Bali, I was in a cornfield one day writing my journal, and I had this epiphany that I am an actor, for better or for worse. This go-round, I'm an actor. There's really nothing to be done. And that was a fantastic day, needless to say. I came back from the trip. I felt amazing, completely alive and invigorated.
And were things different when you got back?
Amazingly, one of the things I'd always wanted to do was grow my hair because I'd always had to be this clean-cut kid. So I grew it out on the trip, and when I got back, my hair was down on my shoulders. And my first audition when I got back was at Playwrights Horizons, and I showed up and was sitting there on the little sad folding chairs with my hair down to here, and a guy who was always at my audition showed up, and he goes, hey, Reed, how you doing? What's going on? And I thought, been away for a year. I've been around the world. I can't even begin to tell you what's going on. And I realized that if I hadn't gone around the world for a year, I'd still be sitting on this chair next to him with short hair. But I got a wonderful job when I got back, The Common Pursuit, one of the greatest jobs I've ever had. I did that for 6 months and then back to plays in Cincinnati and Louisville, just right back to the journeyman actor life.
So you aren't this huge success like you anticipated in your 20s, but you are working. At least you're working.
I was always working, but they weren't particularly interesting parts. I'd have these great experiences or not so great experiences, but nothing ever changed. And at that point, I'd been an actor for 20-something years, and there were a fair amount of people who were like, hang in there, it's going to happen. And I was like, there's no guarantee that it's going to happen. I'm already kind of old. And I think if it was going to happen, there probably would have been some indication, but there wasn't.
How did you deal with that? Is there any advice you would give to an aspiring actor in the same situation?
The big shift for me was when I met Connie, my wife, and I started to have a family. And that started to change things just in terms of my life. My career wasn't any better, but the rest of my life was. So I would say to somebody is that it's so important to cultivate everything else. My problem is that I didn't have anything else. So that was a huge shift. And then the big shift in my career was in 2006. I did a play at a major New York theater. I had 7 lines. It was not a good play. It was not a play I was interested in. I only did it because I'd auditioned for it and I'd been cast, and I felt like I should work at this fancy uptown theater because I'd always worked off-Broadway. So I thought this would be good for me, but it was a complete disaster. The lesson I learned there was, okay, Reed, the dream didn't come true, so stop trying to go for it. Stop taking parts because you think it's a career move. You just got to play parts that are interesting to you. And at that point, I realized that I was kind of on the other side of the mountain.
How old were you when you had that realization?
I was 52.
How did it change you?
I thought I probably have 25 years left as an actor. If those 25 years go as quickly as the first 25 have gone, I'm looking at a very specific set of coupons. So the new rule had to be, is this a project I want to spend a coupon on? And that made a huge difference psychologically for me. I wasn't trying to play the game. I was really choosing roles based on interest. And within the year came Blasted, which is the play that changed everything. It primarily changed things for me artistically in that I was so scared of it. On page 3, I take off all my clothes and say to the girl, put your mouth on me. That's page 3. And I just thought, how can I do this thing? It literally made me sick to my stomach. That's how scary it was to me. And I thought, well, if you have to do it, if it scares you that much, you need to do that play. And then I had to take all my clothes off in the play. And so I did that on like the 4th day of rehearsal, and I didn't die. I thought, I can do this. It was incredibly empowering. It wasn't a part that I would have gone to see and thought, why wasn't I seen for that? I felt like Superman after that, and that's what changed mostly. There was a confidence and fearlessness that I've had since Blasted. And it didn't hurt that everybody in the world saw it. It ran 3 months, and it really changed everything.
Reed was nominated for a Drama Desk Award for his performance in Blasted and has gone on to receive a Tony nomination for his work in Casa Valentina in 2014, and in 2016, won the Tony Award for his role in The Humans. He has also appeared in the critically acclaimed off-Broadway production of Uncle Vanya, the Broadway production of Picnic, and has a recurring role on Netflix's House of Cards. In 2016, he was honored with a caricature at Sardi's, which is basically a theater actor's version of a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. It only took him 40 years. During his acceptance speech at the Tony Awards, he said this, I've been an actor for almost 42 years, which I cannot believe I'm saying. 35 of them were pretty bad, and that's a lot of them. I just couldn't get anything going. The last 8 have been great, but the thing that was always great, wherever I was, whatever level I was on, were the amazing people I got to work with. Almost all of them were hilarious and talented and full of passion and joy, and they loved putting on plays and telling stories. They always have been and are still the best part of what I do. And I am so grateful to all of you, and I love sharing the planet with all of you. Thank you very much. Advice from peers. I was recently asked to speak at an actor's workshop in Los Angeles. I told them I was writing this book and asked what they wish they knew when they began their journey and what advice they could pass on to those just getting started. Here's what they said. Give yourself time to figure out who you are. Get mentally prepared. If you come with a deadline, that can trip you up. Mentally play the long game. Don't get hung up on timelines. I had a great agent and was getting great auditions, but I wasn't ready. Now I wish I'd known I wasn't ready. I wish I'd taken more advantage of the years before I moved out here and worked on my reel and resume. I'm doing those things now. I'm from South Carolina, and I wish I'd auditioned there and taken advantage of that market. Being in class makes you a working actor, even though you're not getting paid. Auditioning is the job. Best advice I've gotten. An audition doesn't mean everything else in my life stops. I still have to go to class or to work, and the audition is just another part of my day. You get paid a lot of money on the days you work to make up for the days that you don't. Save it. 90% of the readiness is believing in yourself. You're the commodity. Treat yourself well. Make your own work and write a role that you want to play if you're not getting cast. Check your ego and be open to learning. Acknowledgements. As with most creative projects, this book exists thanks to the efforts of many people. This is where I get to thank them. Thank you to my parents, Jim and Ann Fisher, my first cheerleaders, and the first to believe that I really could do this crazy acting thing. Thank you, Richard Abate and Naomi Odenkirk, for trusting in this project and helping me to make it a reality. It was 7 years between our first phone call and a finished manuscript. Thank you, Glenn, Monica, Debbie, Leah, Sarah, Adrian, Jennifer, and everyone at Ben Bella for your guidance, support, and enthusiasm. Thank you to my artistic circle of readers and advice givers, Michelle Gunn, Trevor Allgut, Lindsay Schuberth, Gia Croviton, and Robert Davanzo. Thank you, Ainsley, for transcribing all of my lectures and interviews. Thank you, Naomi Odenkirk, again, Allison Jones, and Mara Casey for your insider information. A special thanks to Allison for going to her storage unit to find the original casting breakdown for Pam Beasley. Thank you, Reed Burney, Sean Gunn, Derek Waters, and Natalie Z for letting me share your stories. Thank you, Weston and Harper Kirk, for visiting me in my office 12 times a day as I wrote this book. I loved every time you knocked on the door. And most of all, thank you to my husband, Lee Kirk, a professional writer who read every draft, edited every story, and polished every joke in this book for me. He took my clumsy writing and turned it into something readable. You've earned a free pass for the next 5 Valentine's days. Note, if any of this seemed clunky, it's because I didn't let Lee edit it. I wanted it to be a surprise. We hope you've enjoyed this novel audio production of The Actor's Life, A Survival Guide by Jenna Fisher. Narrated by the author. Foreword written by Steve Carell. Read and commented on by Rain Wilson. Interviews performed by Natalie Z, Sean Gunn, Derek Waters, and Reed Burney. Executive producer Michelle Katz. Recorded at Studio City Sound with director Jorge Reyes. Post-production by Dion Audio, with editing by Samantha Pritchard. Quality control by Gianfranco Hidalgo. And mastering by Mike Hoagie. Print copyright 2017 by Andicat Productions Incorporated. Production copyright 2017 by Novel Audio. Produced in arrangement with Ben Bella Books Incorporated. If you enjoyed this audiobook and want to see our full library of fiction and nonfiction titles, please visit novelaudio.com. Thanks for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.